This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a long night last night as Donald Trump shocked pollsters and the media by defeating Hillary Clinton to become the 45th president of the United States. Why did the polls miss the Trump voters, and what role did evangelical voters play in this historic election? Pollster Alex Muir, senior vice president with Wilson Perkins Allen Opinion Research, answers us by the numbers a little bit later here. Don't go away. Also, last night, we saw the election of some solid pro-family conservatives to Congress and also to state legislatures and as governors in various parts of the country. We'll actually talk with one of those new members of Congress. We talked with him actually earlier today. We did a special webcast here at the Family Research Council, Election 2016, Where Do We Stand? In fact, you can watch all of that by 30 minutes. Go to TonyPerkins.com. We've got it posted up there for you. But Congressman-elect Jim Banks of Indiana was with us. We're going to hear that interview. And then the first 180 days will be critical for the new administration. I mean, this is historic in that we have a Republican president coming in. We have a Republican House. We'll have a Republican Senate. What will he accomplish in the first 180 days? It'll be critical. Well, we're going to talk about that here today on Washington Watch. What do you think should be his top priorities as he begins in January with a Republican House and a Republican Senate? We'll talk about it here on Washington Watch a little bit later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, you can watch the special webcast that we did earlier today, kind of breaking down various aspects of the election last night. Election 2016, Where Do We Stand? Again, that's found at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, they've been called the hidden Trump supporters, the silent majority. These are the voters who turned out for Donald Trump yesterday in record numbers that pollsters, quite frankly, didn't catch, and the media certainly didn't report on it. Well, joining me now is Alex Muir. He is the senior vice president with Wilson Perkins Allen Opinion Research. Alex, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Alex, all right, let's jump right into it. How is it that these voters were missed, these Trump supporters? What happened to them? Where'd they come from?
Well, the first thing to say is they're actually not more voters than last time. There are a great many fewer. Ms. Clinton got almost 7 million fewer votes than Obama did in 2012, and Mr. Trump got almost 2 million fewer votes than Mr. Romney did. So the question somewhat isn't so much where did the new voters come from as where did the voters go?
Well, there were a lot of voters that did not show up in the polls that ended up voting for Donald Trump. Obviously, he was under polling the whole time. What's behind that?
Well, in terms of wasn't being polled correctly, out of the 65 races we were actively tracking on election night, we were only outside the margin of error on four. So it is possible to poll accurately. Much of the public polling wasn't, and much of the good polling isn't public. The issue there is mostly about how you compose your sample.
Right.
If you're doing random digit dialing to landlines, you're going to miss people, and a great many people were missed.
Now, was it also, were there Trump supporters that were just declining to speak to pollsters or be identified as Trump voters, or was it just the fact that they were missed?
Well, there are probably places where that is true, and part of what's going to be very interesting as a research professional is going back through in a matter of a month or two when we have the actual voter files about who voted and going through and seeing, okay, who did we potentially miss? Where were we right? Where were we wrong? The problem with exit polls, of course, is they're self-selecting. People have to choose to speak. So they are traditionally not very accurate. So what we have right now in terms of which groups are responding as having voted are not very accurate. So we're going to have to go back and see what that actually looks like. I don't know if there was, in fact, a silent vote. My suspicion is the closest thing to it is that there will be a bunch of working-class white Americans who traditionally are registered Democrats who voted for Mr. Trump. I expect that we'll see that across the Midwest, but I have to verify that before I can say it's a fact.
Well, I think, I mean, like in Michigan, for instance, according to 2012 exit polls, Mitt Romney won rural Michigan in small towns by 53% to 46%. Trump won that 57% to 38%. Pennsylvania, similar in that Romney won rural Pennsylvania in the small towns 59% to 40% margin. Trump won them 71% to 25%. So obviously something going on there where he was pulling in voters that Mitt Romney was not able to capture in 2012.
That appears to be true. What also appears to be true is that some of the suburban Republicans who Mr. Romney was able to pull didn't show up for Mr. Trump. A good many registered Republicans seem to have voted for Mr. Johnson. This is up from 1.2 million nationally last time to 4 million this time. But we have to see where those people in fact are and which groups they belong to.
Now, USA Today reported earlier that the turnout, they were saying, was nearly 5% over what voter turnout was in 2012. You're saying that it was actually fewer voters than in 2012?
Potentially. I mean, one of the things I'm waiting on is the final recounts, but we do have fewer votes cast for the major candidate. That right now is no longer in discussion.
So what do you attribute that to? You think a lot of people that were staying home in this election or what?
The exit polling certainly seems to indicate that there is a downturn in the East Coast. You see a downturn in African-American turnout, a downturn in Hispanic turnout. That's not true in the Southwest, where Hispanic turnout is up. And in Nevada, Representative Heck is not going to become a U.S. senator as a result of it. That's a fairly direct connection there. But what does seem to have happened is that a bunch of people, especially on the Democratic side, did stay home. And a lot of people, probably Republicans, but we haven't got the ability to prove that yet, voted for the Libertarian candidate.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us Wednesday afternoon. Lose track of time here. Alex Muir, my guest, Senior Vice President with Wilson Perkins Allen Research. All right, let's talk, in the couple minutes we got left, let's talk about the evangelical vote. Numbers showing that they actually voted in higher percentages for Donald Trump than they did Mitt Romney and John McCain, and even George Bush going back to 2004. What are you seeing in those numbers?
That certainly seems to be the case, especially in the Midwest and in the suburbs around some of the cities of the East Coast, that evangelical voting is up, that turnout is up. So I would say that it's a fair statement that the evangelical gap that we've heard about in the past for McCain and Romney was filled this time out.
It's interesting, the narrative, a lot of the media going into this election, that the evangelical vote was falling apart, that movement was dead, that it was, and of course this is recycled because we see this almost every election cycle, but they actually were probably more significant in this election than we have seen. I think they were pretty significant in 2004 with George Bush's reelection, but I think they had a more decisive impact in this cycle than we've seen in the last 16 years.
I think that 2004 would probably have been a slightly greater impact on the final outcome, I would say that it's certainly fair to say that after the last 8 years that voting bloc has certainly exercised a larger impact on this outcome than we've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, in 2004, the distinction there is that you had almost a dozen states had marriage amendments on the ballot the same time the president was on the ballot, which actually drove many folks like in Ohio and Pennsylvania that normally did not vote, voted for marriage amendments and then voted for the president as well. So I think it was, you had even greater motivation. So this was a standalone election, essentially, where the issues, I think, for, and I know we're still going to be looking at some exit polling as terms of motivation, but anecdotally, and some of the early exit polling would suggest that a lot of those evangelicals were driven by issues, not necessarily personalities.
I think that's a fair statement, a fair working hypothesis at this point. And you're certainly right about the fact that we didn't have the big wave of state-level amendments on the ballot to drive that turnout.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see in the days coming as we analyze that data exactly what it was that spurred this strong evangelical turnout. Alex, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure, and enjoy your afternoon.
All right, thanks so much. Alex Muir, Senior Vice President with Wilson Perkins Allen Opinion Research. And folks, we're going to be, in fact, FRC Action is doing some, we did some exit polling of our own to dig a little deeper, and we'll have that data, possibly I might have it for you tomorrow night. It's going to be quite interesting to look to see what it was that was driving this turnout, what issues mattered most. I mean, I've got a pretty good idea based upon, you know, what I've already seen, what I witnessed firsthand, and quite frankly, what I hear right here on Washington Watch. You guys are very helpful and help me work through these things. That's why we love to hear from you on the phones. I love to hear from you on Twitter and email, because that helps us get a real sense of where people are. And as we kind of walk through this process of this election together, kind of looking at what was at stake and coming down to where folks were making a decision, you know, we saw that and heard it from you. And this was a, let me just say, a seismic election. This was epic in terms of the impact that this is going to have. I mean, it was shocking to the Wall Street crowd, shocking to the media, and internationally sending a strong message that this is a different America. And you think about it. I'm going to look at some of these congressional races and what happened in Congress, where we stand right now. We have solid control of the Republicans have solid control of the House, the Senate. I think we have, looks like that's going to be close to the Senate, because you've got a couple of races that are not in. Republicans have about 51 seats. You've got the Louisiana race will not be decided until December. And you've got a couple others still kind of being counted. But no question the Republicans will control the House. I mean, they'll have the majority. Now, remember, in the Senate, did I say House? They'll have the House, and they'll have control of the Senate. Now, remember, in the Senate, procedurally, they operate differently. You can't just have a simple majority. You have to have that threshold of 60 votes. So they're not going to be there at the 60-vote threshold. So it's going to make operating there and getting things through a little more challenging, but they will have the majority. It's going to be up to President Trump on how he's going to work through that. All right, we're going to talk more about that, what this election means. We're going to be talking with you about what you would like to see the Trump administration make as their top priorities in their first 180 days. What should they focus on? All right, we're going to talk about that. And when we come back, I'm going to play a clip for you from our webcast from earlier today with Congressman-elect Jim Banks. He'll be a new member, strong member, solid. We're going to hear that and much more to cover here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back right after this.
Every day, more schools around the country are giving in to the transgender agenda. Boys claiming to be female are already being allowed into girls' bathrooms and locker rooms. What can parents do to stop this disturbing trend from spreading to their children's schools? Family Research Council is now offering a new resource to help. A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement in Education is a concise brochure that can be downloaded at frc.org/gender. To order hard copies, call 800-225-4008. You'll learn valuable tips on how to talk to your children, their teachers, school board members, neighbors, and fellow churchgoers, and the steps you can take to prevent the advancement of the transgender agenda in your school. Again, the number is 800-225-4008 to request this brochure. Your gift of just $5 will cover the cost of shipping and handling, and additional copies are available for $1. Thank you for standing strong for the family.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
The church in America is in a state of spiritual emergency. Though we have access to more resources and biblical teaching than at any time in history, we are not characterized by the supernatural power of the Holy Spirit. Every time in Scripture when God's people cried out in humble, desperate, repentant oneness, He responded in favor of their prayers. Every time. Today, across our nation, God is waking up believers from our slumber to earnestly pray for revival in brokenness, humility, and repentance. Since only Christ can save, heal, and revive, let's join together to turn from every sin God reveals to us, pray with urgency for spiritual recovery and awakening, and unite with other believers in spreading the hope of Christ-centered revival.
Unite with others for one night, one hope, one cry. From Lake Point Champion Center in Cartersville, Georgia, on Sunday, November 20th at 5 Central, on American Family Radio and OneCry.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Big night last night. We'll talk more about what it means going forward, but the Republicans, for the first time in a while, will have control of both the White House and Congress. They will control the House and the Senate. The House, still a couple of races that are, you know, it'll be a few days before everything is, before the dust settles completely, but we're looking at about 238 Republicans to 193 Democrats. The majority is 218. So the Republicans have a margin of about 20 votes to work with there. So that means they lost a few seats. They were at 246 before the election. But we've elected some strong conservatives. Still a couple of races still, as I mentioned, being decided. Louisiana's one. Mike Johnson in a runoff with a Democrat in – I don't have the name in front of me – in the seat of the – 4th congressional district. The other seats all decided. So there's just, and Louisiana's kind of a little different. We have these jungle primaries where everybody runs, and then the two top vote getters, could be two Republicans, could be a Democrat and a Republican, will go head to head next month in December. So the Senate race in Louisiana will be decided next month as well. You'll have a Republican and a Democrat in that race. But we have earlier today, as I mentioned, we had a webcast kind of giving a quick analysis of where things stand right now as we have come through this election. Number of really good men and women being elected to Congress. One of them from Indiana, he was State Senator Jim Banks. He will be coming to Congress and be a part of the Freedom Caucus. Strong conservative, pro-family fighter. He joined us earlier today, and I wanted just to listen to a clip of this. And by the way, you can listen to the and watch the entire 30-minute special webcast we did, Election 2016, Where We Stand, at TonyPerkins.com. We had Scott Rasmussen on that, a number of our in-house experts on breaking down the numbers for you and telling you what it means. But I want you to listen to this. This was State Senator Jim Banks, now congressman-elect from the state of Indiana. where we saw significant success in electing not just Republicans, but conservative leaders. And one of those is Congressman-elect Jim Banks of Indiana, a longtime pro-family leader there in the state of Indiana, now coming to Congress to join the ranks of the real fighters who are going to fight for your family and the principles we care about. Jim, welcome this afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. It's great to be with you.
And once again, congratulations on a hard-fought victory, and we're excited about you joining the ranks of the Freedom Caucus and the other fighters here in Washington, D.C., for the values that you have represented for so long and that we care so deeply about.
Well, thank you, first of all, to the role that Family Research Council Action and your PAC played in my election victory, both in the primary and yesterday. I'm very grateful to FRC for the work that you do, and I look forward to being a partner with you in Washington soon.
Jim, let me get your sense from last night's victory for Donald Trump. What message do you think is being sent by voters across the country, and in particular there in Indiana?
Well, from a perspective of Hoosiers, Tony, I couldn't be any more proud that Mike Pence is going to be the next vice president of the United States of America. He's been a tremendous pro-life conservative leader for our state as governor over the past 4 years, and America is in for a real treat with Vice President Mike Pence. And for me, that is fundamental to how I feel about Donald Trump as well. The president-elect showed tremendous leadership and judgment when he picked Mike to be his running mate. When it comes to choosing those Supreme Court nominees, having Mike Pence at his right hand to help advise him is so important to make sure that we get pro-life Supreme Court justices who will vote to overturn Roe v. Wade, protect our religious liberty, and fundamentally restore this country to what it can and should be. So I'm excited. Hoosiers overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump and Mike Pence, as well as pro-life, pro-family leaders to take the helm as governor of the state of Indiana. We sent another pro-life United States senator to Washington starting in January, and Todd Young as well. I think what we've seen in Indiana is what we've seen all over the country. This is an exciting time for conservatives.
Jim, I want to get your sense, because you are going to be coming here to Washington at a very unique time in history. Very rarely do you come where you have a Republican president, a Republican-controlled Senate. We're going to talk about that. The Republicans retained control of the Senate. They've retained control of the House. This is a very unique time. What is at the top of your agenda and your priorities as you come to Washington?
Well, for me, Tony, what we've seen play out in Indiana, the battle over our religious liberty, which is so fundamental to what we are as a country and who we are as Americans, that battle is going to be waged in state houses all over the country and in our nation's capital. And I look forward to working with FRC and others as a strong proponent for the preservation of our religious liberty, our religious freedom, in the years to come. So I believe that'll be a battle that will be fought that I look forward to being a part of. But also, as the most recently deployed member of Congress, when I get there in January, having just deployed to Afghanistan last year, I look forward to working with President Trump and Republicans in the House and the Senate to restore the greatness of the United States military. I know that's fundamental and important to you as well. To confront the threats that we face around this world. The current administration, I believe, has done more to diminish the role and strength of our military than we've ever seen in American history. And having just been deployed to Afghanistan, I got to see that firsthand with my own eyes. And when I get to Washington, I look forward to being an advocate for a stronger, more mighty military to confront the threats that we face at home and abroad.
Well, Congressman-elect Jim Banks, again, congratulations, and thanks for joining us on this very important day.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, look forward to seeing you here in Washington, D.C.
Have a good day.
That was Congressman-elect Jim Banks from earlier today in a webcast that we did, Election 2016, Where We Stand. You can find more of that at the website, TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We're right back after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, thankfully, the election is over. We had a great result that we can praise God for. I believe God's grace is shining upon this nation. Once again, he is giving us another chance. Let's hope we don't squander it. And I find it very encouraging to know that I, for one, can begin to do analytical work based on some scenarios that are going to be far more less, I guess, than they were, a moving target, and things that are not politicized, but real growth scenarios. So that's very exciting for me, and it should be exciting for all of Wall Street. But of course, you have seen what's happening in all of Wall Street. They're concerned. They're citing the uncertainty of Donald Trump. What they're concerned about is the certainty of the punch bowl being pulled away. You think they would be excited about the opportunity for growth, but that does not seem to be the case. But I think it's going to be short-lived. I am not saying by any stretch of the imagination that we couldn't end into some very difficult times for the stock market. Make no mistake about it, we are in a very overly valued market. There is no doubt about that. And just this election is not going to change that, and something's got to give. The question was, are we going to have someone in office that's going to be able to lead us through a potential recession? It looks like that is the case. And we should take some confidence knowing that we can look forward to a pro-growth environment.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, as we were talking about, significant election last night caught the pollsters by surprise. The media incensed, I think, by the results. In fact, I mean, it got to the point where the media was trying to, I think with their reporting, shape the outcome. It's quite clear. And Donald Trump in his events actually taunting the military, I mean the media, very, very interesting to watch. But here's where we are now. The Trump administration will begin with a Republican House and a Republican Senate. Again, not a huge majority in the Senate, just barely having a majority. So it's going to be rough going. But still, they have complete control of Congress. The first 180 days, critical. That's where his administration will, I mean, that's where they make it or break it. That's where they accomplish what they set out to do, what they promised the American people they would do. And as I was saying earlier today on the special webcast we did, for all of those that went out and voted yesterday, and I would venture to say that, you know, the vast majority of all of you that listened to this program went out and voted. That was what we were seeing going into this election, and the polling suggests as much. But your responsibility didn't stop yesterday when you went and voted. First step, very important and greatly appreciated. But now it's a matter of walking alongside those that have been elected to both encourage them and hold them accountable to what they said they were going to do. And Donald Trump's going to come into Washington, D.C. and run into a lot of political opposition, even from his own party. Now, he's shown that he has the ability to just kind of roll through that, but it's going to require help from the American people. And this is an opportunity of change which is of historic proportions. I mean, think about it for a moment. As I mentioned, has control of Congress, has the White House. That doesn't happen very often. George Bush had it for a couple of years. Prior to that, I think you got to go back to the 50s when they had control of that. Prior to that, it was in the 20s. And usually it's for a very short period of time. Historically, then you have a midterm election and they'll lose one chamber. Now, the good thing for Republicans is they have a pretty comfortable margin in the House. They'd have to lose a lot of seats in the House, and it doesn't look probable. in the Senate in the 2018 election cycle, you only have eight Republican seats up. You have 25 Democratic seats that'll have to be defended. So going into it, it's going to be a challenge for the Democrats and favorable to the Republicans. But having said that, historically, that's often what happens. The administration, if you have a Republican and they have complete control, they'll lose it in that first midterm election. So it's very important that they get their stuff done in that first year, first 18 months. So having said that, what do they need to focus on? What are their priorities? What should they advance as they start in January? And, you know, as I said, you are going to have to be a key part of that, coming alongside, helping reinforce this with members of Congress, whether they're Republican or Democrat. But let's talk about that. Let's talk about what you think Donald Trump should make as his top priorities. All right, 866-372-7234. What do you think Donald Trump should, you can, one, two, three issues, just let's go quickly, because I want to get as many folks in tonight as possible as to what they think these priorities should be. I mean, again, this is historic in that he's going to have complete control of Congress. In large part, this is a repudiation of Barack Obama and his liberal policies. I think it goes beyond that. I think this is a repudiation of big government going back, and not just big government, but this intrusive courts, because a lot of the exit polling, we're going to see more about this tomorrow, but a lot of people listed the court as one of their number one issues as to why they voted. And I think it was a deciding factor for evangelicals. We'll be able to, I think, prove that statistically, but anecdotally, that appears to be the case. I mean, Barack Obama had 8 years, and I think he's destroyed his party. I mean, he's taken his party for a joyride, and now they're broken down alongside the road, because look at the bench. They have no bench on the Democratic side. I mean, Hillary Clinton took up most of the bench, and you had Bernie Sanders running, and then Tim Kaine, her running mate, and I mean, where's he going to go? He's not going anywhere. He doesn't have a future. But look at the number of Republican leaders. I mean, you had 17 candidates in the primary. You've got a number of Republican governors. In fact, they actually added to their numbers last night. So the Republicans, I mean, they have enough leadership and conservative leadership. I mean, guys like Matt Bevin in Kentucky, where they captured the House for the first time in 100 years. So you've got a deep bench of Republican leaders coming up. You could see conservatism, if they do what they said they were going to do, you could see, and of course the courts being a part of this mix, you could see conservatism take root for a generation in this country. And of course with it, the peace, prosperity, and security that comes with those governing conservative principles. Pretty significant. Okay, when we come back from the break, we're going to go to the phone lines. 866-372-7234. What should be at the top of the list of Donald Trump's administration's focus when they hit the ground in January? That's coming up when we return here on Washington Watch.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel in March, March 9 through the 17th. We'll be going to the land of the Bible, the Holy Land. We'll be seeing so many places every day. The days are just full of things you've read about in the Bible. And one of the things that I enjoy about our trip is wearing people out. And we'll be wearing folks out during our trip of Israel, because I know that when folks pay to go to Israel, they want to see it all, and we'll be seeing it all, including Bethlehem, Jericho, Jerusalem, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, Nazareth, and much, much more. Won't you join us on this special tour of Israel in March? For more information, just call us and we'll send you a brochure at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or go on the web at twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
The gay agenda, Islam, liberation theology, aggressive socialism. You ask yourself, how should I respond to these attacks on my Christian faith? How can I share Christ in a sinful culture? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. An online Master of Arts in Apologetics from WBS will prepare you to defend and share your faith in an increasingly hostile world. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning challenge culture. WBS.edu.
Finish your boxes quickly. This year, we hope to bless 12 million children with American Family Radio and Operation Christmas Child.
At age of 12, 30 kids, we shared one bar of soap. Operation Christmas Child shoeboxes came to our orphanage. Most important to me, it had a bar of soap in it.
This is National Collection Week. Get more information at samaritanspurse.org/OCC. And thanks for partnering with American Family Radio to share the love of Christ through Operation Christmas Child.
Are you concerned about the future? The AFA Foundation can help. End-of-year giving allows you to offset your current taxable income, providing you with valuable tax savings on this year's return. And your generous gift will help further the mission of AFA to inform, equip, and motivate people in the culture war for years to come. Through the AFA Foundation, you're supporting the work of the American Family Association by helping individuals and families leave a legacy to help stem the tide of secularism and rebuild our Christian foundations. As the end of the year approaches, carefully considering what to give and when to give it can increase the impact of your gift while still meeting your own needs as well. For example, with a cash donation, your itemized tax return may allow you to receive up to the full value of your charitable gift. Contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon, post-election Wednesday. I don't know about you. I don't know if you stayed up to watch the whole thing, but it was a long night. Long night last night, but well worth it. And tell you what, a lot of work now to be done. Last night was just the beginning. So let's talk now about what should be the focus of Donald Trump as his administration begins in January. And all right, lines are lit up. We're going to get through as many of the calls as we can today. First, we're going to go to Texas where T is on the line. T, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. How
yep.
are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm surprised you let me on So first of all, I guess thank you.
Go right ahead. You still there? T?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay, I can hear you.
Okay.
I don't think he's going to build the wall. First of all, I highly doubt that he's going to build the wall because the Mexican president has said he's not going to pay for it.
Okay, so but let me tell you, what do you want him to do first?
Okay, what I want him to do is, it's a divided, how is he going to heal the country? I mean, his message only resonates with a certain kind of people. And, you know, I mean, do people different from him, do they have a place in his America? Do non-Christian people? You know, do they have a place in his America, or is it just going to be for the conservative, white supremacist?
Well, it sounds like you've been watching too much MSNBC to suggest that because people who are supporting him, you're characterizing them as white supremacists. And look, I'll let you identified yourself as not being a Trump supporter, but I'm not going to let you join the ranks of like Hillary Clinton calling Trump supporters deplorables and white supremacists. I get your point, but remember this, that his message of a nation with borders, an America that stands for something that's protecting the ideals that America stands for, and those foundational principles of promoting those and protecting those, like religious freedom, which is not just for Christians. I mean, but obviously it protects Christians. That's why he won the presidency. Even though, you know, there's, I mean, that's how we have elections. That's how we arrive at consensus in this country. Now, we've had 8 years of an administration that has attacked religious freedom and Christians in particular. And I think Americans have gotten tired of that. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons that evangelicals showed up and supported somebody who did not necessarily reflect their values in his personal life. They didn't identify with him when it came to values, but they're so tired of, you know, their values being mocked by the media. They're so tired of being, you know, these attempts to marginalize them that they said enough is enough. And they came out because they believed that Donald Trump is going to push back and not allow the media and the elitist in this country to control it. Now, you know, that freedom goes for all people. T, you can have the freedom to have religion or not have religion. But what Donald Trump said is we're going to be a nation of laws. And I know that's kind of hard to swallow for some, not those of you listening, and I'm not directing this at you, T, but this has been 8 years of lawlessness. This administration has unleashed lawlessness. Whether it talk about fast and furious, not enforcing immigration laws, whether we talk about the IRS targeting conservative organizations and refusing to prosecute those responsible, whether we talk about Hillary Clinton and her private email server in which she looks quite clear violated the law in terms of handling classified material. I guess it's going to make some people upset that we're actually going to have one law for all people, whether you're the little guy like us or, you know, the big guy that has the foundation where you can get millions of dollars for making speeches because you're connected to the Secretary of State. We're a nation of laws. That's how it works. T, thanks for listening. Hope you'll continue to do so. Let's go to Mississippi, where Shannon is on the line. Shannon, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. How are you?
I'm actually quite well. How are you?
That's great. I'm doing much better than I was 2 days ago.
Yes, I understand. All right, what do you think should be number one?
Well, I think that dealing with the Iran nuclear deal would be top of the list. I would be interested to hear what the new administration and the new House and new Senate could do something about that.
Well, he made it a key point in his campaign, his election. And I think it's obviously a critical issue. That entire region of the world is in total meltdown and chaos. So it's going to have to be on the top of his list. I mean, I tell you what, it makes almost makes my head hurt thinking about everything that the next administration is going to have to do to try to fix. And I mean, just move quickly to fix things, not necessarily solve everything, but just to fix kind of the free fall that we're in because of the bad policy, especially on the foreign front, that this administration has engaged in. I mean, there's going to be so many competing issues for top priority. Shannon, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Walton in Arkansas. Walton, welcome to Washington Watch. What's number one for you?
Well, to go along with what the first caller said, albeit he was on the wrong side, we need some national sovereignty to be restored. Since we've had probably at least 2 decades worth of presidents who are globalists, it's kind of a breath of fresh air to have someone who actually cares about maintaining some political and economic borders.
Right.
Because that's something we haven't seen in quite a long time.
Well, it's hard to have a country without borders. I mean, that's important. Economic borders, security borders. I mean, and I think from a security standpoint, and I know Donald Trump's very good on the trade issue and wants to address those issues, and I get that, and it's important, and it's a part of revitalizing, especially our manufacturing base. But from a national security perspective, I mean, these porous borders, it's like a ticking time bomb. And I'm not talking about people that are just people coming in from our southern border, from our southern neighbor. We're talking about people who are taking advantage of that border that are not from South America, that are in Central and South America, but coming from other places with ill intent. And that's reason one to secure that border. Walton, thanks so much for the call. Greatly appreciated. Let's go to Pennsylvania where Joseph is on the line. Joseph, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for all you do, Tony.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you. And I trust you were part of Pennsylvania showing up in numbers yesterday to go into the red column.
I guarantee you I was. Everybody I could talk to.
So what do you think should be number one for the Trump administration?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to give two.
Okay.
First one, Supreme Court justices, because that then we can get people that will follow the Constitution, get God back into the country where he needs to be, and create equality for everybody, whether you're rich or poor.
Yeah. Well, well, let me just comment on that, because you're absolutely right, because actually he will come into office with a vacancy for the Supreme Court waiting for him. So that clearly is going to be at the top of the to-do list. Go ahead with number two.
Number two is on borders, because it is absolutely dangerous to live in America during this time.
Yeah. And it's only going to get more so. It's just going to get more dangerous as the world becomes more volatile, and you have groups like ISIS, you know, because he has said he wants to eliminate them. And therefore, you know, they're going to move quickly to try to prevent him from eliminating them. So it's a dangerous world, and those borders are a key part of that. Joseph, thanks so much for listening and calling in today. Let's go to Missouri where Matt is on the line. Matt, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks so much for all that y'all do.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, I just swung my flag first time in 8 years, and never more proud to be in the United States.
You know, that's a good point, Matt. I have been flying. I have a flagpole in front of my home, but I've been flying for the last 6 years an Appeal to Heaven flag, which was George Washington's, one of his first flags in the War for Independence. It was the pine tree with the words appeal to heaven. He flew that over his navy that he put together. And I now feel like America, maybe we're coming back. And so I will, in January, I'll replace that with a flag. But until then, I'm going to continue to appeal to heaven. That's the flag I'm flying at my place.
Right on. I look forward to the freedoms, too. My first would be appeal Obamacare, because it'd be so simple with the swipe of a pen and the way our houses are set.
Yep.
And I did have another, which your caller before me was the Supreme Court justices, most of all.
Yep. Very good, Matt. And the way the repeal of Obamacare, we went through this process last year with what was called reconciliation. If you were listening last year, you know we talked about this quite a bit, where Congress gets one shot a year where they do what's called reconciliation. It's a budgetary measure that doesn't require the 60-vote threshold in the Senate. So a simple majority is enough to get it through the Senate. So we actually passed that last year, and it repealed the vast majority of funding for Obamacare. There's some... It can only deal with fiscal aspects. It can't get into the policy, so there's some limitations on it. But when you don't have the 60 votes, it's a way to get something onto the president's desk. We also, in that, defunded the vast percentage of funding for Planned Parenthood. We went through that exercise knowing that the president, Barack Obama, would veto it because he's the most pro-abortion president in the history of the country. And he also obviously was not going to sign a bill that would eliminate his signature piece of failed legislation, Obamacare. But now that could actually be awaiting President-elect Trump when he arrives in Washington or shortly thereafter. That reconciliation bill could be on his desk this time to repeal Obamacare, to defund Planned Parenthood. And so, Matt, you're right on target. He can deal with the Supreme Court vacancy. He can repeal Obamacare. All of those things could be done. Also, I would add that he can repeal by a stroke of the pen all of the executive orders that Barack Obama did. All of those can be eliminated. All those overreach, the executive overreach that President Obama has engaged in the last 8 years, can all be undone. And he has the power and the authority to do that. And so that as well needs to be at the top of his to-do list because he can do it. I mean, it absolutely can be done. So now, really, in many ways, for Republicans, and not so much with Trump, but the Republicans in Congress, the leadership, Republican leadership, who have always said, well, we can't do that because we don't have the White House, or we can't do that because we don't have this chamber. Well, no more excuses, guys. In January, no more excuses. You've got the White House. You'll have a Republican president, have a Republican Senate. I get it. I know you don't have 60 votes, but be creative. Use your head. You've got the House. We ought to start seeing things done. We should begin to see conservative governance in America. Let's put those conservative principles in practice, and let's smoke out the liberals. You know, put them on the hot seat, and make them, you know, if they want to be obstructionist, if they want to shut down the government, you know, if they want to do all these things they've accused Republicans of doing, let the American public see that. Look, Donald Trump has shown you can go around the media and to the American people successfully. He did it. I think it's time that the Republican leadership that has acquiesced for far too long to the Democrats, that they follow Donald Trump's lead and they get something done. It's time to start making that to-do list and get ready to get to work. But folks, let me remind you, you've got to be a part of that. You've got to be engaged. You've got to be informed. You've got to be communicating. But most of all, let me challenge you to do this. Pray. Pray, appeal to heaven, but act on the earth. Be praying for the incoming Trump administration, the incoming members of Congress. Pray for our nation, but be willing to be a part of answering those prayers as God calls you to do so. All right, folks, out of time, but we'll be back, Lord willing, tomorrow night. I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.